Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Friday, July 2nd. Only two more days until Independence Day. Get your flags out. On today's episode of the Roundup, we're going to talk about social determinants of health and the role they play in building a better healthcare system for all Americans. Specifically, we're going to talk about a new study that links social determinants with Medicare spending and a newly proposed framework to address social determinants. To explain it all and tell us what it means for the future of healthcare delivery are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning, Dave?
As we glide into the 4th of July holiday, Dave, I'm feeling both sweet and patriotic, like a big bowl of red, white, and blue M&Ms.
That is sweet. Julie, how about you?
Well, as you Foresight family know, my family and I are moving back to Seattle after 16 years in California, where I've had both and raised my kids. So we have boxes everywhere, and there's a lot of bittersweet emotions going on, but we're doing well.
You're heading out for the hotter weather, huh, Julie?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, going to the desert, apparently.
Did you get the bins that could withstand the high heat? Because some will melt on you.
Yeah, let's just hope our roommate can pull through.
Sounds good. Now, before we talk about social determinants, let's talk about your 4th of July plans. Dave, what are you up to on Sunday? How are you celebrating Independence Day?
Terry and I are heading out east to spend time with my brother and his family. We've got a new great niece named Josie. Isn't that a great name? Who we've never met. And I plan to have her riding on my shoulders this Sunday until she absolutely wears me out.
Sounds fun. Julie, how about you? Other than packing and moving, any big plans for the 4th?
We are spending our last weekend in Truckee, California, which for those of you non-Californians is in Tahoe, to soak up as much tennis and small town kitschy 4th of July celebration as we can.
Sounds fun. Thank you. For me, I will just live by these four simple words: light fuse, get away. So hard to type a podcast without any fingers.
Yes,
so,
be careful, please.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk social determinants of health, which probably should include access to fireworks at some level. Dave, tell us a little bit about this new study in JAMA on social determinants and Medicare spending. What did it find, and what does it add to the health policy conversation?
There was no mention of fireworks in this massive study, Dave. Clearly, okay. A failing of the researchers. The results of the study in JAMA weren't surprising at all, but that doesn't mean they aren't important. Let's cut to the chase. The study found that there was a 5.8% direct correlation and a 37.7% indirect correlation between a county's level of Medicare spending and its social determinants of health. The study concludes, and I quote, that addressing social determinants of health is important for reducing geographic spending variation and improving the value of healthcare. You know, it's amazing how bloodless the language in these studies can be when they're discussing the negative consequences of poverty and race, as well as substandard education, housing, nutrition, security, transportation, and healthcare access. You know, these factors have a substantial impact on the quality of an individual's life, their health, and their ability to achieve their God-given potential. So in non-statistical terms, the study confirms what we already know to be true, that targeted investments in social determinants of health will not only reduce Medicare spending, but they can also dramatically improve both individual circumstances and overall community well-being. Not surprisingly, as a nation, we spend more on healthcare services on individuals and in communities where there's underinvestments in social determinants of health. Ipso facto, if the nation invested more in social determinants of health, it would spend less on healthcare services. Not everyone agrees with this obvious conclusion. The study noted that critics suggested that inclusion of social determinant factors in risk adjustment for value-based payments would widen disparities instead of narrowing them. In essence, these critics contend that social determinant of health investments would institutionalize those risk-adjusted payments to the point where they would be expected and accepted. I guess these critics would have individuals just pull themselves out of their substandard living conditions by their bootstraps, and somehow Medicare spending would magically decline. That thinking is equivalent to the logic used during the Vietnam War, where the U.S. military claimed it had to burn Vietnamese villages in order to save them.
Okay, Dave, thanks. Julie, what are your takeaways from the study, and why should healthcare executives care?
Well, hallelujah that we're building more evidence for what we know to be true. We know that our intensely analytical, evidence-driven society needs this kind of evidence to drive payment change, budget allocations, and frankly, other creative partnerships, certainly at the government level, to achieve our goals. So now we have more of it. The problem, of course, is that the business case for individual players is still in its nascency, and that's where we're really going to see traction, honestly. You know, I think it's notable that this is based on the fee-for-service spend. As we all know, MA plans in particular are incorporating social determinants into their benefits. So it's one thing to imagine what CMS could do with this kind of evidence as it relates to fee-for-service Medicare. It's quite another thing as the industry moves to fee-for-value and more plans and providers are at risk, of course. We just keep waiting for that nirvana to come. You know, this will increasingly become part of strategies. And what I found interesting was a very small mention in the study that more than 50 health systems invested more than $2.5 billion in social determinants from January 2017 to November 2019. It's no surprise that 41 out of 57 of those organizations were secular nonprofits, 14 were nonprofit sectarian, 2 were public health systems, and wait for it, non-goose egg or for-profit systems. But I suspect that the composition of those spending on social determinants, even today, after the pandemic experience, would look very different. I would love to see what those numbers look like today, honestly. You know, the fast followers are seeing the business case that these, you know, market makers are pursuing. And they may be looking to do two things now post-pandemic. One is really increase revenue where possible. They need it. Those systems have definitely been at the gates of hell and are trying to figure out a new model, some of them. Number two is, you know, many of these leaders, we've talked about some of them here, are acting with a new sense of responsibility for the community in a way that, I mean, simply wasn't the case at the beginning of 2020. And what's interesting to me about that responsibility and the revenue expansion is that I think those two things may just go hand in hand now. And systems may increasingly look to attach consumers to their model like members, and that would accomplish both of those goals. So we have the evidence now. Business cases are on their way with this newfound responsibility and need for revenue. And times may just change around the partnerships and the ways in which systems think about taking on social determinants. But, you know, obviously the plans are pushing that ball forward. I'm not so sure the systems are running to catch it.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. Dave, anything to add to Julie's comments?
What really interesting observation, Julie, on health systems investment in social determinants of health. I hope they're worthwhile, and I hope they're pursuing the payment reform that ultimately has to make those investments work. I'm going to use my little bit of time here to just riff on the phrase social determinants of health. At Foresight Health, we've never liked the phrase. Its meaning is not self-evident, so the terminology requires explanations. That's never a good thing. In addition, the term social determinants itself is antiseptic. The words mechanistically capture the immense importance of education, housing, food, security, transportation, and other day-to-day living factors in promoting well-being and unleashing human potential. As I mentioned earlier, the phrase fails to stir the blood. Enhancing social determinants can catapult disadvantaged individuals and communities into almost unimaginable happiness and achievement. The terminology should capture that excitement. And then finally, social as a modifier of determinants is far too limiting. Numerous and complex interconnections foster longer, healthier lives. We'll discuss social determinant of health frameworks in the second half of today's show. But the language describing the pathways to healthy living, I believe, must be more expansive and invigorating. So as with most great writing, the solution to capturing the many splendid character of social determinants of health is to simplify language and economize on word choice. So with that as our goal, we at Foresight Health offer the phrase healthy multipliers as an alternative. Our new terminology is clean, active, and progressive. Healthy multipliers captures the essence of what's required for healthy living.
At a healthy multipliers it is from now on. Thanks, Dave. Now let's talk about this newly proposed social determinants framework published in Health Policy and Technology. Julie, give us a quick overview of the framework and more importantly, how technology and digital health tools fit into the framework.
Well, you know, the impetus for this study was interesting. It notes that the U.S. ranks above average on care process measures like prevention, safety, and patient engagement. It does not surprise me that we score poorly on care coordination, avoidable hospitalization, and information flow between providers and social service providers. Not shocking. What I love about this study is that they looked at the role of information technology and digital health in solving those very problems. And they ended up developing a pretty holistic framework to support effectively the best care coordination that one can have that specifically addresses the gaps in health multipliers and looked at how technology can ultimately inform what really impacts patient outcomes. In other words, where can technology actually be layered in to solve some of the issues where the U.S. performs poorly, care coordination, et cetera, information sharing, to then really get a good sense of what's driving these issues and where there can be business case built around it. So the framework looks at structural issues, process issues, and outcomes. And structural issues are things like clinical setting, clinical staff, and the IT systems used there. While process issues are things more like performance tracking measures and the healthcare staff interaction with IT. And they look at both those things as it relates to the solutions that really impact outcomes. Now, the fun part about looking through all this was that Matthew Holt and Indu Subbiah are going to roll over right now because the study talks about Health 4.0. I mean, wow, where has the time gone since Health 2.0? So a Health 4.0 world to them really looks like this. Advanced virtualization designed to accurately personalize services in real time. We have very little of that today. Digitalized systems that are accessible, affordable, and convenient for most consumers and patients, which is not the case today. Patients and caregivers actively contributing to the knowledge and decision-making process for care. I would say there's been a lot of talk around this, but that's not where we are today. Care outcomes measures and quality improvement that incorporate social, behavioral, and environmental factors. We are just starting to see this kind of discussion happening. And Health 4.0 envisions the Internet of Medical Things, IOMT, working fluidly with integrated data shared by multiple care settings. I mean, that is our future, folks, and that's not where we are today. So this study's amazing in the sense that it tries to lay out a different way to think about how technology supports all of these things.
Thanks, Julie. Yeah, 4.0, I'm still stuck on 1.0, so we'll work on that. Dave, how does this proposed framework advance the conversation around healthy multipliers, and how does it fit into the push for value-based care models?
I got three points I'd like to make. The first is frameworks are in the air. The ONC this week also just published a framework for social determinants of health or healthy multipliers. And I really like Julie's connection between digital capabilities and really driving better healthy multiplier outcomes. The second point is broadband access is clearly a healthy multiplier. The NPJ Digital Medicine Journal, you know, it's amazing how many journals there are in healthcare, found that 38% of people earning under $20,000 a year lack access to broadband. That actually seemed like a small percentage to me. I expected it to be at least double that. And it seems like that's fixable. We can get broadband access to everyone in the country. And then imagine the framework Julie described with full access. And we know that half of this group, half of the adults earning under $20,000, have smartphones. So I think there is a way to marry the infrastructure with the capability. that it's the right moment in time to do that, which is why it's so outstanding that the investment in broadband access is a key feature of President Biden's bipartisan infrastructure bill. It'll generate a huge return on investment. And then third and finally, and maybe this relates to Julie's observation about health system investment in healthy multipliers, I was a bit perturbed by an NPR and Kaiser Health News study that found investments in social care have mixed results. I mean, the study was fine, and its results, I'm sure, are undoubtedly true. They featured one program from UPenn that underperformed. They offered one-time only access to transportation services to their facilities, and they were surprised by how few people took advantage of the offer. You know, these one-shot deals don't work. Investments in healthy multipliers are long-term work that require commitment and sustained investment to engage participants and earn their trust. I've mentioned before, I'm on the board of the Community Builders, which is the largest nonprofit developer of low and moderate income communities in the country. And in almost all of their communities, they have a community life component, and I sit on that subcommittee. And I am just awed almost by the investment that TCB makes, not only in the buildings and the physical plant, but in the human infrastructure that really give neighborhoods their character and allow them to prosper, allow their residents to thrive. Their work during COVID was just incredible, the extent to which the community life staff engaged residents, kept them safe, addressed their needs, whatever they were, kept them connected, reduced isolation, provided rental and financial assistance wherever necessary. And when you look at the performance of their residents on any metric at all, the number of people who contracted COVID, the number of people that have been vaccinated, number of people, you know, practicing public safety measures, they just outperformed by orders of magnitude other groups in similar income ranges. So we got to be serious about this. You can't make these sort of one-shot efforts and think you're going to solve a problem that really requires full human engagement and commitment.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. Julie, anything to add to Dave's comments?
I agree with Dave completely. And I also think what's helpful about studies like this is that, you know, advice is coming out from notable people. One of my favorite physician thought leaders is David Bates at the Brigham. And he and Jorge Rodriguez came out with some sage advice for systems who want to bring equity to patient-facing digital health tools. So they talked about things like investing in patient portals and apps that address the needs of underserved populations and tracking digital health access and usage across socio-demographic groups, focusing on patient training and the deployment of new technology, and the deployment of new technologies to account for varied digital literacy levels, very, very important. And developing workflows that allow clinical teams to engage with diverse patients across digital health platforms. And I think, you know, potentially very important and almost funny is that they effectively said, don't judge a book by its cover. Encourage clinical teams to offer access to digital tools to all patients to encourage them to use those tools as part of standard care, because you can't tell a patient's likelihood to use digital health by looking at them. So sometimes it's the obvious that becomes important. And I'll just say, from what I do at Transformation Capital, all the technologies I talked about related to the study a few minutes ago and what Bates and team have recommended, they all exist, right? And more companies are innovating every single day at a pace that, I mean, we haven't seen in years. So we have the tools. What we really need is leadership. I mean, leadership, seriously. And the ability to develop these business models to adopt.
All good points. Yeah, leadership is key. It always comes down to people. That's great. Thank you. Now, as always on the roundup, let's talk about next week. Julie, what's making healthcare news after the 4th of July?
Well, I think SPACs are back. I've talked to 3 former health plan executives in the last 7 days who have been talking about how much fun they're having with their SPAC and how they're getting close to making their SPAC a reality. So I think we might be going through wave 2 of a SPAC news this summer.
Okay, we'll watch for that. Dave, what should be on everyone's healthcare radar next week?
I think the infrastructure bills, both of them, are still going to be front and center. And The really interesting thing about this policy debate is that if you cut through the Trump nonsense, what we're really debating is the role of government in American society. And we've really had, since the 70s, even before Reagan, disengagement from government in broader American society and belief that private sector could make up for any government shortfalls. And that's resulted in the world we live in today in many respects, greater income inequality, greater cultural separation, less political cohesion. And I think the Biden administration is putting the issue front and center of reinvestment by government in American society in a much more active way. And that's a debate we're having in a very messy, kind of typical American fashion. And maybe that's a great point to make on the 4th of July as we celebrate our independence and the Constitution and all the things that have made America, America, for better or worse, for over two centuries.
Got it, Dave. Thank you. And thank you, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on the Healthcare Now Radio Network, iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming services. Subscribe now and don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.